What do you say to your typical 7-year-old son when he asks why he has to wipe his own butt and feed his own face when your disabled 10-year-old daughter doesn't? We're going to talk about this and a whole lot more on today's episode of Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenbaum, along with the co-founders of Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation, Mike Gesser and Isaac Shapiro. What's going on, fellas?
Evan.
What's up, Evan?
This is an episode that we've been talking about for a long time. It's tough to be a sibling, particularly a younger sibling, of an older sibling who has a severe disability. And we know about this because I have two children. My older daughter, Sydney, is 10 years old. She has severe cerebral palsy. And my son, Bennett, who's 7, is typical. And he asks me questions about why he's treated differently all the time. And I know, Mike, you have a similar situation.
I do. I have 3 daughters, 5, 8, and 12. My 12-year-old is our disabled child of the 3, and our 2 are typical. And we have many similar situations.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. When you have multiple kids, you always hear about second child syndrome, middle child syndrome, all that stuff. Because when you're a parent, your energy goes into making sure when you have your first kid, you don't screw it up. And then as you have other kids, you're like, okay, I know that I can be a little bit more lackadaisical when it comes to this and this. I was the oldest of 4. And I know that when my youngest sibling, my sister, came around, like, my parents relaxed the rules and she got to stay out later and do other stuff. It was fine. So when it came to parenting, you know, my daughter, Sydney, who is severe disabilities, he's my first kid. We were on top of everything and all this stuff. And then my son, who's typical, my wife and I were like, okay, obviously we don't want him to feel like he's not getting attention. We want to make sure that he's getting attention. We don't want him to feel like second child. Oh, he's attention starved anyway because he's the second child. So we want to make sure to do everything we can to give him as much attention and make him feel as special as possible. But then we started realizing that our oldest, Sydney, not only is she our first, and so we're giving her attention anyway, she's probably getting more attention subconsciously, but then also because she requires so much special attention because of her disability, her severe disability, she can't feed herself, so we got to feed her. She can't talk on her own. She requires devices. She can't bathe herself. She can't clean herself. She requires assistance on that. She can't change herself, toileting, stuff like that. Everything she requires help to do. So we didn't really think about this, even though it sounds so obvious that we should have. But we didn't really think about this in terms of like what he was observing and about his interpretation of what's normal. And so all of a sudden one day he was like, I remember this. He was like, hey, Dad, why do I have to feed myself? Feed me. And I was like, no, feed yourself, man. Like, here's a spoon. Like, feed yourself. And he's like, but you feed Sydney. Why can't you feed me? And I was like, I didn't think about that. And then another time he was in the bathroom and he came out and he's like, hey, Dad, wipe my tush. And I was like, wipe your own tush. And he's like, you wipe Sydney's tush. How come you can't wipe my tush? And I was like, And all these things kept happening. And then it like clicked. When he looks at the way we treat Sydney in our house, that's what he believes is normal. He thinks the way that we parent Sydney is the way that it is. And that's the way it is for every kid. So why is he being treated differently than Sydney's being treated? I don't think he thinks that she's being treated a particular way because she has these disabilities. I think that it started to dawn on me that like he thinks he's been treated differently for like some other reason. and he can't really comprehend it. And so we started having to have these conversations with him about it. And it, first off, I was like, oh my gosh, very smart questions. It stopped being like, I had to kind of come to terms with the fact that like, oh, you're not just being annoying. Oh my gosh, you're not just bothering me to be like, why my tush, feed me, all that. It's not just annoying questions. Like, I had to be like, well, these are actually really smart questions. These are thoughtful questions. You're questioning why things are different. These are really, you're a smart kid. And then I had to be like, I felt bad. It started like, I started feeling like, oh my gosh, are you starting to feel like I am neglecting you or like treating you in a harmful, hurtful way? And then I had to explain to him that I wasn't. And then we started having the deeper conversation about Sydney and her condition and why she requires the extra care. And this all started probably when he was like 2 to 3 years old. And these conversations have kind of helped develop. And now he has a better understanding of it. I mean, not a complete, total understanding of it, but it's a process that we've had along the way. Mike, what's your experience been like?
Yeah, a lot of the same. I think my middle daughter, who's 8, started to, ask certain questions. Why do we keep feeding Rosie? And I agree with you in the sense like that the way she observed us treating Rosie was how she expected to, that's just normal. It's normal. And we would give answers like, well, Rosie needs a little extra help or Rosie can't do it. And I don't think she quite understood the reasons why. If I fast forward to now, there's a very clear understanding Rosie's different. Rosie's not like everybody else. But from in the very beginning, like, same thing. Everything we did for Rosie, there was the expectation that we were going to do for Georgia and for Lucy, understandably. And as they got older, I think that's when those smart conversations, that intuitiveness, became more and more frequent. And you could see their understanding of, I don't need to be treated the same way or have you do things the same way for me as you do for Rosie. But it takes time.
Yeah, it's interesting you guys bring this up. And Evan, you brought the word normal with your son, and I'm just bringing my perspective as a child, seeing a mother growing up, and I couldn't understand why I had a blind mom and why is everybody staring at us at the restaurant. And I struggled with that at a young age, but I never really knew about it until I went out in the outside world. At home, it's so normal. I never saw my mom blind. So like, where do you see your children, in the house, and then what's the difference when they're out? And is that when they're being outside influence some of the questions that's come in? Because a lot of mine questions and stuff when I come to my parents was when I went out into the world. But when I'm in home, it was like, everything's normal. And I never thought anything about my mom even being blind. So I'd love to get your perspectives on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, my wife and I, we would talk about, okay, so when is the right time to like have the deep in-depth conversation with our son about Sydney's condition, and I guess it's a tough question because how much do you tell him and when do you tell, right? Like how much can you really process and understand? So, I mean, it's obvious that she's different from a typical kid because she can't talk, right? And she's 2 years older than Bennett. So why, I think he's starting to, probably when he was like 3 or 4 years old, he started to realize that like, okay, he's talking, she's not talking. He's walking, she's not walking. And he was understanding those basic things. So we were starting to explain like, hey, her body works different than your body. We were explaining it in very kind of simple terms to him at that point. And then he was able to kind of grasp more complex concepts. We would adjust our explanation according to what we believed he could understand and comprehend. So at this point right now, he's 7. We say she has cerebral palsy. I don't know if he completely understands how cerebral palsy works, but he understands that it's a medical condition and he understands that her brain works different and her body works different than other people's bodies and brains work, which is a step up from how he used to interpret her condition to be. He understands that the wheelchair is not typical in terms of like his friends and all that stuff. He understands that like her not being able to use her voice to talk and her computer to talk makes her different from other people. But he loves it. I mean, he loves that she's special. He loves it when she goes to school that her friends, they love to see her, that she, you know, she uses her device to play music and talk and stuff like that. So it's great that she's surrounded by people who appreciate her and love her. And he looks at her with so much respect. And he's fascinated by her, which is really cool. He looks at her with a sense of pride and not a sense of shame. He's really, really, really proud of her and thinks she's really cool. And so but our approach to explaining her condition is like, we really try to explain it to him in terms that we think he can understand and process, but we try not to overcomplicate it, but we don't shy away from it. And when he does ask questions, we do try to, you know, we don't try to shut it down. We do engage.
Evan, you bring up a pretty good point. And I think for any disabled child that has younger siblings, there's that moment when they start passing in development their older sibling, which yeah. is not, I hate to use the word normal. It doesn't typically happen, right? And I remember clearly, like when Georgia started walking way before Rosie walked, I know she knew it. And when Georgia started talking before Rosie, even my youngest daughter, like that, they're aware of that.
Yeah.
And that creates a conversation. And there's so many things along the way, even when we're talking about like self-care, brushing teeth, getting, you know, taking a bath. Like there are certain moments in life that a younger child is expecting to see their older sibling doing. That's when you can't avoid it. And I think how you communicate that, you're right, it needs to be on a level that they can understand, but you can't hide it. And yeah. I think one of the best things that we've done is explain it in as simplest terms and listen to the questions they have, allow them to ask questions. And I think the questions as they've grown up have matured. I think when friends start coming over and seeing that their friend has an older sibling that's in a wheelchair or speaks with a device or has different behaviors, like even more conversations start yep. to come. But there's a point where, and so I guess my point is, talk about it early, because yep. it's going to come up anyway. And I think the more you can prepare and explain and create an understanding, the better of an overall situation of understanding you're going to have.
So your kids are young, right? So like, you know, I'm even thinking as I get older, but like today, since they're young, do you feel like they've had lessons that they've learned, like right now, that maybe a typical person at 7, 8, that you feel like because they've had a sibling with disability, that they've just done something differently, better, you know, just any kind of lessons that you feel that you've already seen in your children just by growing up with someone with a disability in their life?
I do for sure. I think, you know, when we found out that Rosie was going to be disabled, for me, there was that moment of, I can't unsee the world. My kids have grown up now, like from birth, always looking at the world with an accessibility standpoint. And they're growing up, always understanding a little bit more patience, going to a restaurant, going to the doctor, going to a grocery store. We have to do things a little differently. And I also think my kids have a different sense of kindness, because I see how they are with their sister, and they're a little bit protective, but also understanding. And like, if one of their friends asks a question about their sister, I see it in the way that they explain certain things. And I feel like that's just ingrained in them. They don't know differently, just in the sense kind of how you don't know differently with growing up in your house. Your mom was your mom. You didn't realize it was not the same as everybody else until you went out into the world. And I think it's very, very powerful for a child that's not disabled to have that. And I think it's a gift. I think it's a superpower that's going to allow them to do very different things in the world differently than someone who doesn't have that experience has.
Yeah. And I want other people who, I know a lot of people are listening to our show who are new into this world. And I want you to listen carefully because this is really important. We are modeling for our kids how to deal with people who might not be used to interacting with people with disabilities. And so they are paying close attention to how to talk to people that might not be used to seeing a Sydney. And I know my son pays very close attention when you see a person for the first time who might not have ever interacted with a kid with a wheelchair before. And so my son, I've noticed this, I've seen this a million times, where there'll be a kid who walks over and they'll say, like, why can't she walk? How come she's not talking? And they'll ask questions. And it's very, it comes from a very innocent place, but they're asking questions. And then Bennett will watch me and look to me to see how I respond to that, right? And I will model exactly how I think Bennett should answer those same questions. And I'll say, oh, you know, her body works differently. And I'll be very friendly and kind. I was like, but she loves music and she understands everything she's saying. And, you know, she loves, do you like Taylor Swift? She loves Taylor Swift. She can play you a Taylor Swift song. Sorry. I'm sorry. Right now, she's very into K-pop Demon Hunters. I'm sorry. She will play you a K-pop Demon Hunters song. And then they will say, oh my gosh, she loves K-pop. I love K-pop Demon Hunters. And I'll say, Sydney, you want to play a K-pop Demon Hunters song? And she'll be like, see. And then she'll play K-pop Demon Hunters. And then everybody will get along. And then the kid will call her friends over. And then everybody will start dancing. And then Bennett will just be like, oh my gosh. And so the next time that happens, I'll notice that Bennett will have a very similar social interaction. And that he looks like the coolest guy because he's helping Sydney make friends and he feels great. And that I'm sitting there so proud that my son is handling these like complex social situations masterfully at age 7. And then, by the way, I'll watch, and I don't mean to disrespect anybody here, but I'll watch people who are much older, who are sometimes trained professionals, who get approached with the same situation, that don't know what to do when they get asked for the same questions by, you know, in similar situations, and they fold because they don't know how to answer it. And I'm just like, to your point, Mike, it's a superpower.
Superpower.
It's a superpower that he's going to be so confident and so gifted at handling these kind of situations that he's starting at age 7 already.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So like,
I can relate with it.
Absolutely.
Your kids are going to be very strong. It's going to be deep. I mean, I think some of the emotional scars that I hold, because I just was constantly like, oh, your mom is blind, and you go to school and you start a new year and people come over. Oh, Isaac's mom is blind. And I wasn't taught a lot of that stuff. You know, it's different outbursts and things. And I remember one year, like fourth grade year, it was like, you know, I'd be upset and hit back on someone. But it's amazing how mean kids can be and they don't understand it. And what I did understand a little bit is you're even trying to explain to your son at 7. So to expect other people, you know, that don't have a disability, how do we work with them? Because it does leave strong scar, but I think I've turned it into a positive, and I think you two are doing a great job modeling it. And you're showing how to behave that way because it does stick with you and it makes you a stronger person.
Yeah. And the other thing, you know, on that note is look, sometimes there are people who are mean and you just don't know why. And we've also dealt with that, like kids who say mean things and you try to explain. We've talked about it on this show. You try to explain and try to give them opportunities to understand why what they're saying is not nice and can be hurtful. And for whatever reason, the people don't understand it. And I've had the opportunity to explain to my son, like, hey, sometimes people just say mean things and they don't know why. And, you know, it's not your job to try to figure it out. You just got to shake it off and move on and find somebody who is nicer to you and is nicer to Sydney. And you just got to let those people go. And you model that too. You model, like, you don't need to fist fight every single person. You're right. That guy's not saying nice things to Sydney. He's not saying nice things to you. Hey, you know what? We're going to move on and we're going to find somebody who is going to be a nicer person, a nicer friend, and we're going to spend time with them. And that's, you know, he'll figure out how to nap, or hopefully he'll use those lessons and surround himself with good people. And you know, Mike, you were saying that you're talking about kindness. I see it in the way that he plays sports. When a kid hurts himself playing soccer, Bennett comes over and sees that we can help. I mean, there is a sensitivity to people who are injured or who need help. And I think that's because he sees it with his sister who needs help a lot. And he's always willing to, you know, he understands the need and the obligation. And he also sees that when people do help, how grateful we are as a family, when people come over and offer help. And I think he wants to be that person to help other people too. And I think that's, again, another benefit of being a part of the disabled community.
Yeah. Something that I noticed with my kids is like when we're out somewhere, people stare, people look. And both of my younger daughters are in tune with that. And they know, like, if somebody's looking, like, because, like, a kid specifically. And sometimes either one of them will go up to them and say, "Oh, this is for my sister Rosie. This is her wheelchair, or this is her walker." Like, they sense the curiosity coming from that kid because they don't know or they've never seen somebody like my daughter. And they'll just go and tell them what it is, right? Or when we have, when our kids have friends come over, and the friends have not seen Rosie before, they'll say, "This is my sister Rosie. She's disabled," right? Like opening it up, like making it like, this is just how it is here at this house. And, you know, they'll say, like, you know, "That's her walker," or, you know, "She likes to give hugs," or something. They will, like, you know, set the stage for it. And I see that, and I'm like, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, they are like very forthcoming. They approach it. It's not a secret. They don't hide anything. And, you know, like, and then the kids that are curious, like, the curiosity is satisfied. And then it just makes an overall situation where now the kids know they're in Georgia or Lucy's house, and this is their sister who happens to be a little different, but they told me about her and it's safe. And this is just how it is at Lucy's house or Georgia's house, in the house, outside of the house. And that's what I'm seeing. Like, I think it's amazing. And I'm going to kind of relate this to you, Isaac. Like, I can somewhat imagine what growing up was like for you when I see it with my kids. And I think you're the master of, like, socializing and talking to people and going out and, like, communicating, whatever it might be. But I see a little bit of my kids in that, like, developing, like, they don't have a problem talking to anybody. They're just go out and do it. And I think that's something, I'm sure it's, you know, there's other people that are just naturally social, but I do think that there is that element that probably develops inside somebody when they grow up. That's all they know, is that there is somebody that's vastly different than the majority of the population.
Yeah. Well, I think as we get close to, and I'd love to just ask you too, as dads, what's the hardest part emotionally about trying to balance the needs of all your kids?
I think that's a question, whether you have two typical kids or a kid with a disability. It's, you know, it's hard. It's hard for, you know, any parent with any kids, but, you know, you try your best. I mean, I try to give Sydney everything that she needs to survive, and I try to give and thrive in life. And then you try to be there to support Bennett. And then we try to make it a group effort, right? When Sydney has things that she needs to do, we try to involve Bennett and make sure that he's her biggest cheerleader, which he loves being. And then when Bennett has stuff, we try to make sure that Sydney's there to cheer him on. And so it really does feel like we all have each other's backs all the time. We're all supporting each other in everything that we do. We have, you know, we sit down at dinner, we talk about our days, we make sure that each kid gets time to talk about their days. We're all up to speed on each other's lives. We try to communicate. Communication is key. And we just try to do the best we can to share, and we do the best we can.
Yeah. So I totally agree. For me, like, my biggest goal in life is to be the best father I can be to any of my kids. And I'm constantly, like, my Vistage chair, Irina, she's amazing. She makes things so simple. And she always says to me, or she uses this example that she would do with her kids, like, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we? And she has her kids, and her kids will say, "Oh, we're a 6 or whatever. Well, how can we get from a 6 to an 8 or a 6 to a 9? And it's so simple. And sometimes I get really good answers. And the other thing is, that I realized, and I struggled with this, like, how do I make sure that my other two daughters don't feel slighted or less important? But what I realized is, and I heard this from somebody, I don't know who to quote it, but like, love multiplies, it doesn't divide. And every time, like, I'm wondering, you know, am I doing enough, or am I showing enough love? I realize I have enough love for all three of my kids, and I shouldn't worry personally about not giving enough love to one or the other. And especially in this case, like, am I giving more love to my child that is disabled and not to my other two because they don't need it, when I know that all my children need love the same?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you two bringing this up. It means a lot to me, just because I grew up with someone with a disability in my life. And I feel like, you know, there's a superpower. So when you say it's a superpower, I was very disintrigued and listened, because, like, I just think it's a special thing. And I already hearing your kids are on the way to just doing great things. And I appreciate you two sharing your story about this.
Yeah, and plus he's getting strong, pushing a wheelchair. I mean, it's building leg strength, so hopefully it'll help improve his soccer 100%. Game. We'll see.
100%.
All right, look, we appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much. I love these shows, man. These are great, and the feedback we've been getting is great. Remember, if you like the show, help us continue to grow. Like, subscribe, share, comment, all that good stuff, and we will see you next time on Driven by Purpose.
Thank you.